Supervisors, please take your seats. We'll call the meeting to order. If you are here, please check in on the computer. Audrey's here. I saw her. Oh, there she is. Audrey, I have 29 board members present. That is a quorum, so let's continue with the Pledge of Allegiance.
The Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, let's go on to the County Board Chair's report. And what I'm going to do is pass around, and Dennis, if you could grab this. This is a sign-up to let us know if you want the County Board or Wisconsin Counties magazine. Remember, there's a charge for that you don't have to pay, but we have to pay. So if you don't read it, or if you're willing to just come to the office and read it there, then check that you don't want to take it. But if it is something that you do read regularly, then go ahead and mark that way. Next thing, important deadline for you to keep in mind. Your 2010 travel reimbursement, if you want to get reimbursed for anything remaining from 2010, the deadline for filing that with the county clerk is January 30th. I'll remind you again at the January County Board meeting, but if you want to start working on that, you're starting to run out of time, so January 30th is the deadline you need to keep in mind in that regard. Supervisor conference reports, Marilyn Pedretti.
I would just like to say congratulations to Jeff Blesky. He's the director of our zoning office. He received the Life President's Award of Excellence from the Real Estate Property Listers Association. He's been there 35 years and doing a great job, and just a recognition. Congratulations.
All right. Arlene Benrud.
Thank you. I had a meeting in Wausau on Monday. And with the DOT, there were 24 of us there. Also, this coming Monday, I have a meeting with the DOT. And Tuesday, I have a meeting with the Conference Coordinating Committee. The federal sends the money down to the state, and then the state sends the money down to the counties. And that's what we're working with them. And we've never had meetings with them before, but we are going to be meeting monthly to find out when and where our money comes from. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Audrey Cotter.
Thank you. And I just want to say thank you to everyone involved in the collaboration conference. It is really refreshing to bring these people together, and the amount of collaboration that can happen is very valuable. So, thank you.
Yes, I would like to second that. I think it was another successful conference. I want to thank Brian Fukuda for organizing that with some assistance from Charlie Handy. And that gets us to Vicki Burke.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yesterday I participated in a day-long training, and it was a program to promote fair and impartial policing, and it was looking at racially biased policing, and we had a Dr. Friedel from the University of South Florida, who was here. She was happy to be here in our cold weather. And it really was a very good discussion of the bias that even well-intentioned people have. And I talked about the blink theory of how we fill in situations that are ambiguous, how we fill in with stereotypes, and that often even well-intentioned people can have bias. And then she went on to talk about interventions and policy, hiring practices, and training. There were 25 people from all areas of law enforcement and from city and from the county, a public defender, judge, criminal justice management council people. So it was an excellent day of training, and I want to thank Jane Claycamp and her role in bringing this to Lacrosse County, and part of the reason was because of the amount of the things that we have done in criminal justice and the spectrum of programs that we offer. And Also, the fact that we're in the with the Urban Institute and National Institute of Corrections. This was by OJA, the Office of Justice Assistance from the state, that actually brought this to us. But a few weeks ago, we were able to get Thinking for a Change, which was a four-day, and these are without cost to us. And part of it is because of our participation with this transitioning from jail to community. So I want to thank her, and we had brought it up at Criminal Justice Management Council, but it was an excellent training, and I think it was just another positive for La Crosse County.
Thank you, Vicki Burke. Bev Mock.
I attended the Wisconsin Land and Water Conservation Association's 57th annual meeting at Wisconsin Dells on December 9th and 10th. Julian Jelazny, the executive director, presented the highlights of the 2010 annual report. A couple things he said were the story of 2010 was a shifting in political landscapes. The movement to stop all earmarks is going to affect at least one of the programs, the Conservation on the Land Internship Program. It has been funded by a congressional earmark courtesy of Senator Herb Cole. Interns work for county land and water conservation districts or for the Natural Resources Conservation Service. 37 interns were placed in 34 counties in Wisconsin in 2010. It gives college students hands-on experience and assists county staff with their workload. Through special assessments being asked of the counties and through further reduction of costs, the revenues for this association have increased. The goal is to continue reducing costs and increase membership revenues. For the first time in a long time, our county is supporting this association by putting some funds in our budget for 2011 to support the work this group does for our county as well as for all of the counties in Wisconsin. I attended a couple of breakout sessions. One was the proposed revisions to NR 151 and the implications for the DNR and the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. There were discussions on how these changes are likely to affect DNR and DATCAP programs at the state or local level. It was felt that the focus should be on farms without 590 compliant plans in existence. The second breakout session was a roundtable discussion on the status of the state staffing allocation grant and legislative efforts to fully fund the staffing formula. Currently, there is staff funding for an average of 3 staff per county at the rate of 100% for the first staff person, 70% for the second, and 50% for the third. Rising staffing costs have meant that the state is having difficulty doing this. We received a sheet labeled Staff Funding Future Directions, which has a list of goals and funding options ideas, some that are current, some previously used, and some being considered. Julian felt we need to stand our ground, and he wasn't too happy with looking at some of these options. All 72 counties need to stick together, is what somebody said, and another person said we do need to revisit the allocation strategy. We need to do a better job of selling the necessity of the conservation work that is being done. One person said we need to talk face-to-face to our legislators about the value of the conservation and land work that's being done, but maybe not necessarily use the word environment. Some people, when you say, well, this is an environmental issue, may not be as excited about it, but if you say it has value to this district, they might like it better. We all need to become acquainted with the new legislators and the new people in Congress and get them to know who we are and what we do. 3 resolutions were passed. 2 were kind of interesting in that the resolution supporting deer management and retention of 9-day deer hunting season failed with 26 opposed and 23 for. the resolution supporting legislation to require comprehensive well water testing prior to real estate transfers passed with 26-4 and 24 opposed. So we had some very interesting discussions. The other resolution had to do with requesting elimination of the potential for Asian carp to spread throughout the Great Lakes and surrounding watersheds, and that passed unanimously.
All right. Thank you, Bev Mock. Mm-hmm. Sharon Hampson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I recently went to my first National Association of Counties board meeting in Dallas, and they talked a lot about the prescription drug program that we're in, and they're now starting to diversify it and grow it, and some are adding imaging and lab charges, so that look for that to change. And people are looking forward to the dental program, which we're helping to pilot. Major concerns expressed were doing more with less revenue, overcrowding in the prison system, and infrastructure. So nothing new, we're all in the same boat. I'm on the Health Steering Committee, and I met the chair, a woman from Palo Alto, California, who used to live on 3rd and Main in La Crosse.
Huh.
La Crosse County didn't pay any of my expenses. And there is a U.S. Community Supplies Contract. Have you heard of that? Well, it's about forming a large cooperative for buying supplies. So maybe check into that. And most important, I got to hear the phrase, all y'all, which is plural of y'all.
Thank you for that enlightening report, y'all. Other conference reports, Margaret Wood.
Not a conference, but a meeting. I attended a Gunderson Lutheran planning meeting where they were seeking community input as the organization goes forward to fulfill its mission, which includes access, quality, and affordability. They, too, are interested in partnering, as Audrey mentioned, our collaborative conference of businesses and government, and they're also very much attuned to being a resourceful member of the region. One of the highlights that they shared is that they really have always been an integrated organization characterized by good communication between different services within the organization, so that they've always discussed a patient's issues, so you're not, each event isn't isolated. And they did mention the new idea about bundling services, in that there would be a price for an event, and it would just be all inclusive, no matter how much care you might need. So it was very informative, and I think we're very lucky to have Gunderson Lutheran as part of our community resources for medical care.
Any other reports? Okay, that gets us to the administrator's report. Steve O'Malley.
Evening. We try not to put too much paper on your desk, but there were a couple things we weren't able to get done. And each year when we actually roll up and give you more information on the actual impact of the budget on individual property tax bills, we've been trying to improve each year with what we give you. So bear with me as I go through my report. I'll get to that as one of the last items, but it just appeared on your desk tonight. For the county administrator's report, I've got a number of items that I want to touch on. Number one is, as the Executive Committee and Public Works Committee just learned at a pre-meeting just before your county board meeting this evening, we have exciting news that we're going to be presenting some progress to you on Park Plaza for some decision-making in January and in the new year, where, thanks to the work of Charlie Handy in particular, our county planner and economic development guru or expert, he's been working with the adjacent landowners to our property at Park Plaza. And specifically, if I can get, if you could back that up, I didn't mean to hit that one. I wanted to hit the laser. I want to stay at the map. One of the problems, and many of the board members that have not been on the board a long time may not understand, that the purple part of the property is what we call Park Plaza. That's the old Holiday Inn site. That's what the county owns due to tax forfeit. We took that several years ago in tax forfeiture, and then we've also incurred the cost of demolishing the old Holiday Inn and disposing of the asbestos. So we've got quite a bit of investment in the property. One of the things, along with marketing and other issues, that's held up the ability to market this property is the adjacent landowner, which is the yellow parcel. As you can see, Water Place 1 owns the water frontage and the adjacent area where the old building was that was just torn down. And what's very exciting is over this last year, we've come to an accommodation where we've torn down, based on our agreement with them, torn down the old Bikini Yacht Club, cleaned up a lot of the site. They've torn down their old building. And what we'll be prepared to present to you in January is a joint marketing agreement with Water Place One, where we'll be in a position that together, instead of us trying to acquire them or them trying to acquire us, we're going to be able to market the entire parcel together as one entity, and we'll be going through a request for proposal process. So we'll be asking you in January to also consider hiring a marketing firm jointly with Water Place One and sharing the cost in being able to market this nationwide, because we believe as the economy starts to turn around, we're going to be in a better position to be able to market the value of that property together. So I'm going to go to the next slide and just highlight. There will be four items that we'll be touching on and bringing you information in the new year. We'll be asking you to consider a contract with a marketing firm. Number two, asking you to consider a joint marketing agreement with Water Place One that will ask you to award and use the RFP process and share costs of that marketing firm under that agreement. Third bullet point is we'll be revisiting the original intergovernmental agreement to share TIF revenues between La Crosse County and City of La Crosse. We already have an agreement that was done, I believe, in 2002 or 3. Between the county and city. A lot of things have happened from then to now. Both parties have spent some dollars. Both parties have made a number of different changes from then to now, so we're going to be revisiting that. If we're able to come together with an intergovernmental agreement changes, that will be reviewed and acted on by the county board and the city council. But I think it's both parties' best interest to be able to move ahead and be able to finally market that and hopefully get it back on the tax rolls with a good development. And last but not least, Corporation Council, county planning staff continue to work to resolve a number of different issues, including there are roughly 36 separate easements that need to be cleaned up on that property that are barriers to a clear title for developers to be able to just acquire it. We need to work with the City of La Crosse on relocation of some of the sewer laterals and some other utilities that are there. There's also a utility building that would need to be taken care of that the city will end up helping to deal with, demolition of that facility. So I think it's very exciting that hopefully we're optimistic about the economy turning around, but being in a position to actually market that whole site will be very positive. So we're expecting to bring you information in the new year. I'm going to ask Charlie Handy also to come in. Charlie, I've tried to skim over this very quickly, but Charlie's been doing a great job for us to try to put us in a better position to be able to market that. I know there are probably a few questions, but Executive Committee and Public Works Committee will be doing a joint meeting in January to deal with a number of these recommendations, but we wanted to let you know what we're working on and a lot of the details. Obviously, the final decisions are yours and the City Council, but I think we're going to be in a very positive position to finally change the entrance to our community and to put something back on the tax rolls that should be very positive. So it's a great breakthrough. So,
Charlie?
I think, you know, of note is the relationship with Water Place One and their significant interest in moving this forward and in marketing their parcel. That has helped significantly with our process. So that relationship is improving significantly, and then that joint marketing agreement, again, will be coming before you next month.
Questions or comments? Jerry Sobranek.
Thank you. Who are the main players or the main entity that represents Water Place One?
Jay Heschler is the partner that is probably the signator for Water Place One.
Jeff Schrader.
A question first and a comment. Where's the county going to put their snow if we get rid of this?
We already asked Jim Spropolis about that, and he said probably Goose Island, which is going to be more expensive.
Okay. No, but I had conversation with some people today, and they were very happy with their work with Charlie Handy, so congratulations.
That's not surprising. He does a good job. Leon Paff.
What is the acreage or square footage of that area? What was outlined there? What we own. How big is it?
It's probably right around 11 acres.
It is that big. Okay.
The two parcels combined?
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
Don Dina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, the problem all along is that we didn't have access to the water. And if you can make a deal with the Hishlers, that would maybe give this whole area access to the water. And the parcel was always too small for a business to go in, and now it's bigger. Maybe we'll have a shot at it. But I hope we can recoup some of that money we stuck into it by tearing the buildings down and everything else.
Well, on that topic, I want to emphasize to the board that that is exactly the plan. I mean, as part of this intergovernmental agreement, we get back every dime. The back taxes, the demolition, the site prep, you name it, we get all of that back. That's why we'd really like to get this sold. Anybody else, questions or comments? All right, Steve, move on to the next one. Thank you, Charlie.
Thank you, Charlie. There were a number of other items that came up in previous reports. Let me just touch on in order then. 2011 budget summary format, you have distributed in your boxes, mailboxes, as well as you should have this available. I'm not going to review this, but you do have a summary document. It has a number of new tables and charts. I know Chuck always likes to have the apportionment chart to look at, so we always include that every year. So there's some details in there. We've last couple of years erred on the side of not making each of you the entire book. If you do want the entire book, let Mary Powell or Gary know. Obviously, there were only a few line items that changed from the original administrator's budget. That is in the summary document, so if you kept both and are really interested, you can always reconcile those two, as well as we do a CD. If you want the budget on CD, we've made that if somebody would rather have that than a paper document. So let me just see if there's a show of hands of anybody that wants that right now, or you can contact finance later if you want a full document or the CD.
What do you want them to raise their hand for, the document or the CD?
Okay, I'll start out with the document. Does anybody want
the hard copy?
The full copy hard document of the adopted budget, more than the summary that you've already gotten.
Terry Johnson, you have a question?
Can I ask a question? Will you be packaging them in some festive way?
Actually, and we'll be marketing them at late night along with other DVDs and CDs.
Like on QVC or something?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, thank you.
All right, how many people want the hard copy? Okay, none. How many people want the CD, DVD, whatever it is? Okay.
It's a CD.
CD. Raise your hands again. I see one, two, three, four. I see five hands.
Okay, but leave your hands up so that Gary can get those down. Supervisor Billing, Supervisor Plesha, Hampson, Conkle, and Geary. Is that right? Okay, we'll get you that when we can.
Okay.
Okay, in the list that I gave you last meeting, we talked about a lot of our accomplishments over the last couple of years, and a couple of things that I wanted to touch on. Included in your agenda packet this evening is the detailed report that Joe Murray talked about from Moody's. This is actually what investors look at when they're considering whether or not to buy our investments. Just a couple of highlights if you had not yet read it. On the second page, we're under the heading Healthy Financial Operations, supported by strong reserves. The county's financial operations are expected to remain healthy due to conservative budgeting strategies and the support of strong reserve levels. In addition to that, a little bit further down the page, it talks about average debt burden with rapid principal amortization. Moody's believes the county's average debt burden of 3.4% will remain manageable given rapid principal amortization. And then it says, while the county's direct debt burden is an average of 0.8. What that means is 3.4% is all jurisdictions. The 0.8 is our relative amount of that. So as you can see, Moody's, through their own independent analysis, has indicated our strong financial position and why they've raised our bond rating. And again, I just reproduced a couple of the slides that I had shown you before to reiterate that only five counties are ranked stronger and higher in credit rating than La Crosse County. So I just thought, since Joe suggested you should get that entire report, we wanted to pass that on. I don't know if there are any questions about that, if anybody...
Joe Billings.
I have a comment. I think this was really interesting information, and I appreciate getting this. Thank you.
Anybody else? Okay.
The next item that we touched on was we've given you various summaries of some of the economic development work that our staff have done and some of the results we've produced. But I recognize that in our last questioning, there were a couple of questions about the revolving loan fund. So I wanted reiterate some of that. You have the detail, although it's a little small print here. The revolving loan funds we talked about, one of the ones that got a lot of questions and discussion, I just want to reiterate, the CenturyLink loan, we've just been in touch again with the Department of Commerce. They expect to actually close that loan, the $4.5 million, by January 3rd. They're wrapping up final paperwork. Brian Fukuda was just in touch with Department of Commerce and CenturyLink again today. The state wanted to make sure that everything is in order, even though there has been a acquisition or a merger, if you will, between CenturyLink and Quest. Department of Commerce, as of today, is confident that there is nothing that will stand in the way of this. And in fact, with our most recent contacts, we are expecting that this merger, if you will, between Quest and CenturyLink, I think it's actually an acquisition by CenturyLink of Quest, will actually expand the number of potential jobs here in the county. There will be a few that will be relocating to Minneapolis that got some publicity, but it's our understanding that La Crosse continues to be a central support area, and we should see the potential for increased jobs even beyond the 640 that were the subject of the grant. So I just wanted to reiterate, I think the board made it clear that you wanted us to do a little bit more follow-up on that and bring you back information. But as everything we've been able to check out, this is still very positive for the community. Again, it's a pass-through grant. No county dollars are there. It was approved by Department of Commerce, but it preserves existing jobs. And this joint acquisition, if you will, between CenturyLink and Quest should be very positive for the jobs and job picture in La Crosse. Any questions about that piece?
Don Vina?
You said it was pass-through money. Now, granted, we get a lot of that money from the state and wherever else it comes from. To put into a business, are you saying then we don't have any loss of our tax dollars at all from the county in these six write-offs that we had?
I'm just talking about CenturyLink. I'm going to talk about the other revolving loan funds.
All right.
You got to take a breath and stop with one question before you move on to a couple of others.
Okay. Well, I was concerned about whether
but can I answer the first one you just said? There is no property tax dollars in the CenturyLink loan.
Okay.
All of that is state and federal money.
Okay.
It's provided under the accommodation that Department of Commerce approves,
and it
needs to be passed through a local government
for
approval purposes.
I realize that. I didn't have any problem with that one.
And then I'll get to the
to
the other loans in a moment. Okay. There was also some question about the six loans that were written off out of the 28 that we've done since La Crosse County has been operating a revolving loan fund. So I wanted to provide you the details. The six loans that are stated there, Classic Furniture, Beacon Bay, Game Time Sports, Global Stakes, and Truck Parts Distribution. As you can see, the vast majority of those are actually quite old loans. Were actually done very early in our revolving loan process. I think we've gotten better at scrutinizing, and we'll continue to get better at scrutinizing loan applications. But I just thought you should know that the ones that have been written off, only one is very recent, which was Airborne Data Link. When Airborne Data Link came in, they were the first to offer wireless internet. Both the city and us invested some dollars. None of those are property tax dollars. They're proceeds from revolving loan funds that we've lent out before and have been paid back from folks like Skipper Liner and others. We don't have any new information on Skipper Liner as of today, but we have not written that loan off. I just want to remind you that's not one of those six. We continue to be in touch with their attorney, and hopefully we'll have some news of finalizing that agreement. But the new owner of Skipper Liner has offered to honor those debts and want to renegotiate terms, so we'll bring that information back to you when that happens. By the way, some of you that are up in Onalaska may have noticed that Made Right, which is one of the loans that we've made, that business has closed, but the owner of that building and the owner of the person responsible for that loan is still making payments. They're hoping to restructure and create another business in that location. Made Right is not written off. They're actually making all of their payments and are fully up to date. So that's everything that I can bring you. What that means is that other than these six and the Skipper Liner issue, every loan that we've made is up to date and is making payments. So I think that's very positive given the dynamics around the economy right now, and we continue to monitor that very closely. But I thought it was important that the full board have the information that the Economic Development Fund has had as we monitor this.
Ralph Geary.
I had a question about that Skipper Liner new owner. Did he buy the building or did he buy some of the businesses and hasn't settled on the rest of them, or what does that mean?
My understanding is he's acquired all of it. I suppose Bill can describe it better than I can, but he's acquired the assets of the former Skipper Liner and intends to restructure and operate that business in some sense. He hasn't announced each one of the pieces, but I don't know, Bill, can you help me describe that better, what legally it means?
Well, I think he really took over the existing first liens on the properties, and I think then Jordan basically turned the property over to him.
Okay, so that the building...
He owns the whole. There are three different corporations. There's an acquisition corporation. There's a holding corporation, and there's another one. And somehow he's maneuvered using those three to acquire the primary first mortgages on all of the property and the title to the property. So he does own that property in one corporation or another, but he does not own most of the waterfront. That's in the name of the town of Campbell.
Oh, okay. Because he's already moved into it, that business he had in Caledonia. Didn't that move over here in December or something? Or
I think so.
They're in the building.
Yeah. No, he's moving forward. The details still need to be worked out, but it's already in progress. Audrey Cotter.
I did see in the paper the other day that they got a contract for building a boat for the government. So I thought that was a very positive indication. Yeah.
Absolutely. Everything we're hearing out of that toll operation has been positive, including the new owner's pledge to pay us off in full. I mean, we like that. I mean, if it means restructuring the terms a little bit, but pay us off in full, I think that's really good news for the county. So.
And of course, we'll report back from the development fund when we have more information on that, but there were some questions about these individual items.
Any other questions on those? Okay.
Okay, those were the items I promised to follow up on. Next item under my report is policy planning topics for 2011. In your agenda packet, on one of the green pages, just following the Moody's report, is a list of potential topics that we've heard from you that you want an update on at future policy planning meetings. If you have other items you want to identify, I'll just take a breath and see if you've thought of more. Our plan in January is to do the solid waste assessment for the full board, and I'll also review the 2011 County Administrator's Work Plan and give you some feedback and opportunity to hear your feedback on the priorities that I see coming up during the year. And then in February, our hope right now is Criminal Justice Management Council presentation that the committee has been working on, and there will be some exciting public news that will happen with an open house and some other things that will be happening in March. Very exciting information to share with our entire community, the success we're having in that area, as well as an update on the obesity prevention grant and complete streets policy. There are a couple of items that might push these items either way, but that's our tentative schedule. And as we get further into the year, I'll keep updating this. And obviously there will be items that will push things off the agenda one way or the other. I would expect probably in March, if not in February, we'll have something on the state budget. The governor-elect will probably be presenting his budget as they usually do in early February. So I'll keep you up to date as much as I can as that goes along. We'll probably be spending a lot of time talking budget, as if we don't spend enough time already, but I'll keep you up to date as much as possible. Are there any other items that I haven't touched on or that I've misunderstood in the list that's here? Because some of these are items that that individual supervisors said, hey, we want to have that come up at a future item, and you want more information on that.
Does anybody have any other ones to add? Okay, this is not a final call, obviously. No. If you come up with things throughout the year, just let us know, and we'll try to get them on there.
Okay. And last but not least, there are two items that are on. Last year we instituted a new handout that we've done. Is that one of the difficulties in doing projections on the impact on properties of the property tax is the impact is as unique as we've talked about to each individual property, what their value changed or not, which jurisdiction they're in. And so hopefully you're finding this information when we get to this level of detail. We take the liberty then of using all of your individual property tax bills without identifying your names and putting it into a table so you can actually see, because you obviously represent the entire county, your property tax bills then are representative of what your neighbors and constituents are actually seeing happen just on the county portion. So it's a little bit of a review of taxes 101. Obviously, taxes are paid by individual properties, but they're impacted by changes in the total tax base, changes in the county levy compared to the previous year, the apportionment or sharing of that county taxes across each one of the municipalities, and of course the assessed value of your individual property. So the total tax base in 2011 compared to the previous year, remember, equalized value dropped slightly by 0.89%, down to $7.6 billion. But remember, if the increase is a lower percentage, the tax rate drops. If the increase is greater than the equalized value change, the tax rate goes up, right? So if equalized value went down and our taxes went up slightly to make the law enforcement center payment, the rate went up, right? So that very simple concept. Total county tax levy compared to the previous year went up by 1.87%. We recall the only reason that happened is because of the law enforcement center addition, lowest increase in 16 years, but it still drove the tax rate up. Operating levy actually decreased by 0.3%, and no increase in operating levy for the second year in a row. The only increases we've had in the last 2 years, even though we've honored wages and benefit agreements with our bargaining units, the only increase was for the law enforcement center. I'm expecting that in the next 3 years, I'll bring you a strategy that will show how we'll keep that level for debt once we close out the budget for the law enforcement center. And if everything goes right, the exciting news, of course, is that the law enforcement center will come in on time and under budget. The apportionment then among the 18 municipalities is described. And if you have last year's, you'll see that this is slightly different. But you'll see that the top municipalities, City of La Crosse, Onalaska, Shelby, those are the ones that actually seen a drop in their share of county tax based on the shifting of assessments and shifting of values. And that's why we do it in color. We usually don't go to a color printer, but you can actually see what those changes are. And then if you go over to the other side, you'll end up seeing that I think it's important and significant to recognize that this bar chart represents what we have been seeing and talking about in things like the collaboration conference and some of the challenges for our signature city, is that the City of La Crosse is losing its share of county tax base, in the sense that we've seen a lot more development of higher valued homes, of businesses outside of the city of La Crosse. The impact is that the city of La Crosse used to represent over half of our tax base for county taxes. Now it's under 37%. So you can see over a period of time what's actually happening. Now, I'm not presenting that as a good thing or a bad thing. It's a recognition of what's actually happening. And if you've had a chance to see Carl Green's report, you can see that one of the challenges for our signature city is the high concentration of lower valued homes, while the higher valued homes are being built outside the city, and that's a challenge to the school district, to the city of La Crosse, and of course La Crosse County. But I think it's important to see that visually. Then if we go to the next slides, we tried to do this description when we estimated everything in your budget hearing, and we discovered that our estimate actually was a little bit higher than what the actual result was on your individual tax bills. So included in this, I took a comparison of that slide and then took the individual properties out of the back part of this and actually compared that. So for example, while Village of Bangor saw a significant increase because of a revaluation, it was not as great on this individual's property tax bill as we had estimated. Town of Washington, it's similar. Town of Madary, there was actually a revalue of that particular property, so it wasn't off by as much. In each case, every one of those, and I grouped a whole bunch of La Crosse properties together, in each case we are off by about 1%. So the impact on your individual property tax bills that you receive in total wasn't as great as we had thought it would be. The total, as I say in the paper that I've distributed, the total county property tax bills by the individual supervisors here went up from $22,319 total to $22,595, about a 1.2% increase. Though again, it's as complicated as individual properties depending upon the individual areas that they're in. And I'm hoping that this is helpful for you to actually see. I think that's my last slide, isn't it? Right. So are there any questions? Again, I hope I was going to give Ray a hard time because his property tax bill went up by about $21 for the county, but last year he got a $50 break, so I hope he's not going to complain at me. So.
Oh, he will.
He will? Yeah, he usually complains. You're right.
Questions, comments?
I should lower my expectations.
Tara Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick comment. This is very helpful, and it's compact, and I wonder if there's some way that we can share this with other elected officials. I had a conversation today with a school board member from an outline from the, I don't remember, Holman School District, and they had received a question from a constituent about why did the county portion of my tax bill change so much. I just think it's well presented, and I wonder if there's some place to put it on a website or some other mechanism that others might be able to reference it and be able to use it with their constituents.
Well,
just a thought.
We put the budget out on the website. We could easily put this out there. I know one of the difficulties, because Carl Green's had a couple of questions from a number of school districts, and they'd like to be able to do something. It's actually not as simple for the school districts, because generally a school district doesn't cover an entire municipality. Ours is self-contained. The county boundaries, the 18 municipalities, period. Whereas a school district will take a part of a township or a part of a village or a part of a city, and it's a little bit more complicated to do, although Carl's trying to figure out a way to do that because, again, as you know, he's done a great job of researching a lot of these things and becoming a better expert, and so we're trying to help find a way to do that, but it's just as complicated.
But if I could, Mr. Chairman, just in those conversations, they could at least refer them to a mm-hmm. document like this that says, you're in our school district, and, okay, let's look, you live in, you know, the village of Holman, mm-hmm. this is what we're looking at. I just think it would be a helpful tool for others as well, besides county board.
Audrey Cotter.
Just looking at the breakdown of the supervisory areas, I only see 15 City of La Crosse listed. Wouldn't there be 60?
Some are renters.
There are two renters on our board.
Ah, okay. Thank you.
We didn't ask for their landlords' property.
Other questions? All right. Is that it for you then, Steve?
That's everything I have.
All right. Thank you very much. Cards and correspondence. Check the board for that over there. No meetings during recess. That gets to appointments.
Chairman Doyle.
I have 11 appointments as listed on the agenda. I would ask for their approval.
Is there a second? Seconded by Supervisor Billings. Discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Those appointments are carried unanimously.
Thank you. Okay, that gets us to the consent agenda. Is there a motion to approve by Roger Plesha, second by Jerry Sobranek? Any discussion or questions on the consent agenda? Seeing none, all in favor say aye. Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. Planning, Resources, and Development, Don Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Item 12-19, conditional use permit number 818 for Sherry K. Noble, doing business as Noble Insurance Service on behalf of Jeanette Baker to operate an insurance agency on the land that is zoned Agriculture District A in the town of Madary. This was voted on and by the committee unanimously to approve with seven conditions that are outlined on your blue sheet.
Mr. Meyer moves the committee report, which is to approve subject to seven conditions, second by Dennis Montai. Any discussion or questions on that one? Jill Billings.
I think this is a typo, but I think we may have to address it. If you look, by unanimous vote, the committee recommends approval of conditional use permit number 818, subject to the following six, and then in parentheses it says seven conditions. So
was it six or seven?
Exactly.
Seven.
There are seven listed, but it says the following six and then seven.
Yep.
So,
Mike, can you respond to that?
There was another one added by the town, and we discussed it at our last meeting, and then we printed this.
So you scooped that one into then?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So is it appropriate to amend that word so it says seven? So it's.
Oh, I see what you're talking
about. The clerk's people are saying that it was a typo, so it's fine.
Okay.
So we're all right on seven.
Okay.
Any other discussion or questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
Item 12-20, conditional use permit number 1856 to Fred Lapanzo, Lapanzo Investment, LLP, to rezone transitional agriculture district to residential district A in the town of Hamilton. This was voted on and passed unanimously. I move for your approval.
Mr. Meyer moves a committee report, which is to approve the request. Is there a second? Seconded by Bob Kyle. Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
All right, on the next one, you will note before we start that it calls for 10 conditions and there's only 9. Jeff Blushkin and I talked about this morning, and there's been a new copy put out that's corrected that says only nine conditions. So it's item 12-21, conditional use permit number 817, filed by Michael D. Ruskey, doing business as North Country Contractors of West Salem Incorporated to store contractors' equipment, supplies, and tools on part of a 38.86-acre parcel that is to be zoned agriculture or exclusive agriculture district in the town of Barrie. So this was voted on and unanimously approved with the 9 conditions. Move for approval.
Mr. Meyer moves the committee report, which is to approve subject to the 9 conditions, seconded by Mr. Bina. Any discussion? Jill Billings.
I'd like an opinion from our corporation counsel. If this is a legal document, and there are two now that were kind of, it seems a little loose to me. I mean, especially that first one, could it be, I mean, if someone didn't want to follow that seventh condition, could they make a legal argument? Well, it's...
I think if it was agreed that it was the typo should be corrected.
So our minutes will show that? Okay.
Yeah, the minutes should reflect that it was seven, I believe. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and then this one, it's 9, right?
Well, the new one out says 9.
This one is 9.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Other questions or comments? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
Okay, item 12-22, conditional use permit 819, filed by Justin Peterson, a.k.a. Creamy Creek Holsteins, and LLC, acting on behalf of John J. and Donna Hansen for livestock facility expansion and after-the-fact animal unit expansion for up to 454 animal units, including an approximate 110-foot by 124-foot barn expansion and implementation of a barnyard runoff control practices to land zone exclusive agriculture district in the town of Burns. This was voted on and approved unanimously. I move your approval.
Moved by Mr. Meyer, seconded by Mr. Bina. Discussion? I do have a question, maybe for Jeff or the committee. For these after the facts, is there an additional charge that they have to pay?
Yeah,
when they okay.
There is, yeah.
Be double the
double?
Normal charge,
okay.
Because he exceeded 200 animal units, and we have an ordinance which says anything over 200 animal units, you have to go through a different process.
Okay.
So he had to pay the back penalty along with the approval.
Okay. Jeff Schrader.
Just for clarification, now, what is an animal unit?
It's a certain weight of animal. Charlie knows that. Well, actually, Leon would know that.
I don't know exactly, but an adult animal, like a cow, is one.
Yeah.
1.4, and the heifers and stings are on a revolving scale there, and calves are less. So it's.
And I'm sure you're all wondering the answer. An alpaca is, I think, 0.6. You were probably wondering. All right. Any other questions or comments on this one?
One more. This does
wait,
say.
Wait. We have to vote on it. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
It's after the fact, then. I hope I won't get charged. But it says approved with conditions, and really the conditions are to follow the DABCAP rules in Chapter 51.
Okay.
It really doesn't list it, but that's really what it amounts to.
All right.
Item 12-24, conditional use permit number 820, filed.
Wait a minute. One before that, Don.
1223. Oh, okay. Let's do that. Item 12-23, zoning petition number 1857, filed by Scott and Christian Bockham to rezone from exclusive agriculture district to agriculture district A in the town of Greenfield. This was approved unanimously, and move for your approval.
Mr. Mayor moves the committee report, which was to approve, seconded by Dennis Monti. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
Item 12-24, conditional use permit number 820, filed by Jeffrey W. Baker to operate an auto repair facility, which includes mobile air conditioning and refrigerant repair on a part of a 20-acre parcel zoned Agriculture District A in the town of Hallam. This was approved with 13 conditions. They're all defined on your blue sheet. I think the numbers match on those. Yes, they do. So I move for your approval.
Moved by Mr. Myers, which is the committee reports, which is approval subject to 13 conditions, seconded by Marilyn Pedretti. Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
That's all I have.
Thank you, sir. That gets us to Executive Committee. Tara Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have item 12-25 to the honorable members of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors regarding acknowledging the best of public service. Whereas the following employees have been a faithful part in providing the best of public service to La Crosse County: Mary Ellen Princeton in the Human Services Department, 42-plus years. Dennis Osgood in the Highway Department, 39-plus years. Wade Anger, also in Human Services Department, 35-plus years. John Jensen in the Human Services Department, also 35-plus years. Michael Zine in the Solid Waste Department, 34 years. Linda Stone, County Clerk's Department, 30-plus years. Mark Koenig in Facilities Department, 29-plus years. And Thomas Sherwin in the Sheriff's Department, 26 plus years, just for those mathematicians in the crowd, that's a collective 270 plus years of service to La Crosse County represented by these employees. And where it is the wish of the County Board of Supervisors to acknowledge long and faithful service on behalf of the citizens of La Crosse County, now therefore be it resolved that a resolution extending our congratulations be recorded in the La Crosse County Board proceedings and a certificate of our actions be presented as an expression of our gratitude. I move its approval.
Moved by Terry Johnson, second by Sharon Hampson. Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. And congratulations and thanks to all of those people.
Item 12-26 to the honorable members of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors regarding the claim of We Energies. Whereas We Energies has filed a claim with the La Crosse County Highway Department and Corporation Council alleging that the claimant suffered damage and associated loss of gas consumption on or about June 30th, 2010. And whereas Wisconsin Municipal Mutual Insurance Company, known as WMIC, has reviewed the information, investigated the facts, and recommends formal disallowance of this claim by the county board. And whereas the above stated claim does not appear to be meritorious and should be disallowed, now therefore be it resolved that the claim of We Energies against La Crosse County, its departments, officers, officials, employees, and agents is hereby disallowed, and further be it required that notice of disallowance of this claim shall be served on the claimant by registered or certified mail, and the receipt, therefore, signed by the claimant or the returned registered letter shall be proof of service. Be it further resolved that the claimant is notified that no action on this claim against La Crosse County or against any of its departments, officers, officials, agents, or employees may be brought after 6 months from the date of service of this notice of disallowance. Fiscal note is the cost for sending certified mail or restricted delivery to the claimants is $10.04. I move its approval.
Moved by Terry Johnson, second by Arlene Benrode. Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
Item 12-27 to the honorable members of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors regarding designation of an official newspaper for 2011. Whereas La Crosse County Board Rule 2.2 Parent 6 per Wisconsin Statute Section 985 requires the designation of an official newspaper for La Crosse County. And whereas the La Crosse Tribune meets the requirements per Wisconsin Statutes 985.03, now therefore be it resolved that the La Crosse Tribune is designated and approved by the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors as the official newspaper for La Crosse County for the year 2010, expiring December 31st, 2011, expiring December 31st, 2011. Fiscal note is there is no fiscal impact. I move its approval.
Moved by Terry Johnson, seconded by Monica Cruz. John Menninger.
Well, and I'm all in favor of this, but how can you say there's no fiscal impact? Because once you designate it as the, I mean, this resolution doesn't have a fiscal impact, but once you designate it as official newspaper, that means that all your legal notices are going to be put in that newspaper. You're not going to put it in the shopper, you know. So.
Right. I'll let Bill answer that one.
And then secondly, you probably don't have this now, but I'm just kind of curious how much we do give the La Crosse Tribune every year. Huh? No, I'm not picking on. I like the La Crosse Tribune. I think they're a good newspaper. But.
They have great reporters.
Yeah. Duly noted.
I think the answer on the fiscal note, since these cowards over here aren't answering, is that this simply makes a designation of where it's going to go. It doesn't put anything there. It just says that when we're going to put something in, that is where it's going to go versus something else. All right. Somebody had to step forward. Don Bina.
Well, you know, we had this discussion 10, 15 years ago, and for 1 year we went out to West Salem and used that paper, and it didn't work. That paper don't have enough circulation, so we have to have a paper that circulates through the whole county, and the Tribune does it.
Further discussion? All in favor say aye. Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
Item 12-28 to the honorable members of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors, a resolution establishing the process to fill the vacancy in the office of County Clerk. Whereas County Clerk Linda Stone has announced her resignation effective January 3rd, 2011, and whereas the resignation date misses the deadline to fill the vacancy with an election in the spring of 2011, Therefore, the earliest special election could be held November 2011 at an anticipated cost of $50,000. And whereas Wisconsin Statute 17.21 Parent 3 states that a vacancy in the county clerk's position shall be filled by an appointment of the county board for the remainder of the unexpired term, unless a special election is ordered by the county board, in which case the person appointed shall serve under his or her successor until his or her successor is elected and qualified. And whereas the term of the county clerk ends January 6th, 2013, now therefore be it resolved by the La Crosse County Board that the following process be used to fill the vacancy. One, publish in the official county newspaper a notice of vacancy in the office of county clerk and an invitation to persons interested in filling the vacancy to submit to the personnel department a letter of interest, which includes their qualifications for the position and a resume, by January 19th, 2011. Step two is the executive committee will analyze the submissions of interested persons, select persons to be interviewed, and conduct interviews to make a recommendation to the county board of the most appropriate person to fill the vacancy. Be it further resolved that the executive committee will recommend the name of the person who should be appointed for consideration by the county board for the remainder of the unexpired term ending on January 6th, 2013. The fiscal note is, if published in the La Crosse Tribune three times, the approximate cost would be $400. I move its approval.
Moved by Tara Johnson. Is there a second? Seconded by Jill Billings. Discussion. Maureen Friedland.
I'm not sure why this is a political office, except because of tradition and also, of course, the fact that the clerk helps to oversee elections. And this calls for absolute integrity and fairness. I'm also not sure why anyone would want this position. I know that the intense computer work involved in it would kill me personally, and it's not a job for rookies or for the unqualified in any way. There is the advantage that if the winner is with the Republican Party, that person gets to ride on the float up on the top, and I don't recall a Democrat being in this position since I've marched in any of the parades. But the Democrats walk on by foot.
Water.
So, okay. Nevertheless, it is a position. It calls for competency. It has a very good salary, and one might even say it's one with political potential. And I think that it needs full and fair advertising. It needs a time for a reflective application to be put in, and even time for residency to be established by someone who might be out of the area who might want to come in. I don't know if opening this process for over a longer period of time, extending this over a month or 2 months, would bring in more applications or not. I have no doubt that any of the well-trained personnel that we have working in that department already would be excellent in this position. Maybe holding this open or extending it over a period of a month or two wouldn't mean more applications, but it does seem to me that the process is very important and that this isn't a fair one for applicants other than people who may already know about this position, and I don't think it's a very transparent one, and I think that it should be done over a longer period of time.
Just for clarification, Maureen, it would be over the course of a month. That ad has already been written. It would go in tomorrow, so it would be published over the weekend. So it would be approximately a month before the applications would be due.
Okay.
John Menninger.
Well, I talked about this last month a little bit, and I just want to just chat for a second about it again this month. Obviously, this is a partisan job. That person runs as a Democrat or Republican. Now, you talk about qualifications and the most appropriate person. Usually when you interview somebody for a job in the private sector, you can't ask them of their political affiliation or refuse to hire them based upon their political affiliation. The question I have for Corporation Counsel is, when you interview these people, can you ask them, are you Democrat or Republican? Because that's important. This is a partisan political position. And as you know, I'm a Democrat. And I want more Democrats in the courthouse. I was really happy when Tim Grinke was appointed district attorney, because now we have one Democrat in all the partisan offices in the courthouse. I would like to have more. So my question is, this is an opportunity for the Democrats or Republicans to fill a position. These candidates for office, can you ask them, are you a Democrat or Republican, when in your interview? And that, this is important. This is not silly. This is important stuff.
Bill?
Well, given that this is an elective office, you're pointing somebody to fill an unexpired term. I don't think that political affiliation in this case is discriminatory.
In other words, the answer is yes, you can ask that.
I guess that's a fair question to ask, whether or not. I guess I'll leave it up to the county board to decide how important that is.
Okay. Audrey Cotter.
Thank you. Having gone through a process of appointment or non-appointment of late, I know that the situation is totally different from the county and the city, in that the county is partisan, the city is nonpartisan. But it seems to me that going through the process is laid out by the state, and you have limited options as to how to proceed. So you're basically following state law, and if you want to change any of it, you're going to have to really get a change at the state level. So I suppose there's room for an independent in that office too. So that it's more a comment than anything that I wanted to make.
Don Meyer.
Well, first I would agree with Maureen on how this job takes a very skilled person to do. That certainly is something I would agree with. But up through the November elections, you heard a lot about big government, bureaucracy, and people were upset how things were done. And one of the solutions was keep it simple and get the job done. And I don't think we're proceeding in a very simple way. Even tonight, we're talking about things, what we're going to do when people that submit interview or job applications, what day we're going to meet, and we haven't even voted on this yet. My question is, and I'd like you all to think about this, why are we spending $400 for advertising, spending time for reviewing the submissions, and interviewing the candidates to fill a county clerk's position where we already have a very capable deputy clerk in place that could fill a position, and, most important, hit the ground running the next day? The deputy did the job when the county clerk was recovering from her recent accident, and from what I understand, she did a very good job filling in. Another thing, I even heard one supervisor state, oh, we're looking outside, but in the end we'll hire the current county deputy anyway. It's been stated, I heard it. Hiring someone from the outside would mean a long-term learning curve for that person. And guess who will be training the new hire? If you guessed the current deputy, you're right. So I don't understand why we're spending the time and money to move ahead with this unnecessary process when we do have someone here that could do it. With this in mind, I'm offering the following amendment. I've already given this to Linda, so she has it up there. Where are we at? In the resolution under the now therefore be it resolved, eliminate points 1 and 2, then eliminate the next one that says to be further resolved statement and the physical note, and then proceed with appointing the deputy clerk on an interim basis until January 6th, 2013.
with an adjusted salary to be determined for the position. This would allow the deputy to run for election at the end of the term and not lose her union rights. The last part would be to proceed at once with the process of hiring a replacement person to fill a vacant county clerk's office. That's my amendment, and I would appreciate your support. Thank you.
Is there a second to the amendment? Seconded by Joe Bill Skemper. Discussion on the amendment, and Linda, I would ask you to restate it for us just so make sure everybody's clear on what was changed and what we're voting on.
The amendment is, under the now therefore be it resolved, eliminate points 1 and 2 and eliminate the be it further resolved statement and the fiscal note. Proceed with appointing the deputy clerk on an interim basis until January 6, 2013 with an adjusted salary to be determined for the position. This would allow the deputy to run for election at the end of the term and not lose her union rights. Add to proceed at once with the process of hiring a replacement person to fill the vacancy in the county clerk's office.
Next person I have on the list, and we need to be discussing the amendment at this point. So the next person on the list, Andrea, are you prepared to talk about the amendment? Point of information, Jeff Schrader.
I didn't catch the last part of what the amendment was there that Linda read about the appointment of, what was it, just the last sentence or something you said there?
It was to add, proceed at once with the process of hiring a replacement person to fill the vacancy in the county clerk's office.
I have a question on the union rights thing. Is that a correct statement that she would not lose her union rights if she's appointed the interim county clerk?
There's no authority in the statute that I can see that talks about interim, but I guess it's been done. I can't give you any legal guidance on that. They talk about filling the office for the residue of the unexpired term unless a special election is ordered. That's what the statute says. It doesn't say anything about an interim. So I don't know. Sorry.
Okay. On the amendment, next person I have is Ralph Geary on the amendment.
Well, I was actually on something else, but I might as well get my say on this one, too. I feel the cost is minimal. The timeline is quick. On most jobs for the employers now, they have that little thing on the bottom where an EEO employer means people can apply for the job. I'm assuming the best candidate will float to the surface and will fill the position in a reasonable amount of time. I'm just saying that it must be legal, because Bill would have said if it isn't legal, for a minority, a person with a disability or whatever, to apply for jobs in the county, are elected positions any different than any other job in the county, is my question. And are we in compliance with those types of laws?
Did you hear his question?
I'm sorry, could you repeat?
Is an elected official vacancy exempt from federal and state law that protect minorities and people with disability for applying for the position? Is this exempt from those types of laws?
I asked that question at executive committee, and Bill's answer was this is not exempt.
Right.
Right. Is not exempt. The only exemption, it sounds like what Bill is saying, is that you can consider partisan affiliation. All right, next on the list, are you, the amendment, Tara? No. John Menninger on the amendment.
Well, I'm going to try to be real brief here. One could make a good argument whether these should be partisan offices or elected at all, but that was decided way back in 1848 when our founding fathers liked the long ballot rather than the short ballot, but I won't get into that discussion right now. And I want to make a disclaimer. I assume that young woman up in front is the deputy clerk right now. I've never had a conversation with her. I'm sure she's a wonderful, decent human being. I don't even know what her name is, but that's beside the point. So this is nothing personal, okay? But all of us are here because we're elected officials. And now we don't like elections. It's just bizarre. You know, we want to appoint people. I believe in elections. We get here based upon elections. We ought to have elections. And if you want to change the Constitution to make this an appointed office or a nonpartisan office, well, then petition the state legislature. But we don't have that authority. This was decided a long time ago how we fill these positions. And they're partisan positions. They are. And you folks know, anybody who's been around, that the person who is elected appoints their deputy, and their deputy for a long time, and then when they decide to retire, the deputy takes the job. This is an insider's game. These are not jobs to be handed out as gifts. You ought to run for that office and face the public, and if you can't face the public, at least face the county board. And so I just think that this amendment is wrong. It's wrong on the merits. And we ought to do what, you know, support elections. And if you want a special election, I'm not going to even ask this question, because we could have had an election this spring, just like Scott Walker, and just like maybe our one of our state representatives. We could have an election this spring if they would resign by December 28th. But for some reason, that isn't happening. So now we've got to pay $50,000.
John, in this case, it would have been November 30th.
Okay. All right. So I'm wrong. Not the first time. But that is true with Scott Walker, so they can have the spring elections, and that's what's going on.
Right.
So I just think this amendment is wrong. And I think the process that's been identified is a fair one. And if this, I'm not personalize it, but I'm sure she'll apply for it. Maybe she's the best candidate.
Jill Billings, on the amendment.
I have a question on the details of the amendment with this second hire. So if the deputy takes over as interim director, then is not elected to that position, then is the old position still open so that that new hire is out, or do we have extra employees in the office now, or how would that all work out?
Could I just clarify one thing?
Go ahead, Bill.
You asked me about the interim. I don't think that anything in the statutes talks about an interim. What the statutes do talk about, and I'd like to clarify my previous answer to you, in the statute, it specifically says that a deputy clerk can perform or shall perform all the duties of the clerk during the absence of the clerk or until the vacancy is filled. So if you want to do something less than appointing a clerk, my suggestion to you is just calling the person or having the deputy clerk continue to serve in the clerk's absence until an election is held.
In other words, do nothing.
That is one of the options that you have.
Okay.
Can I continue?
Absolutely.
So under this amendment, this amendment says we would be appointing this person interim deputy, and we're hiring another person. Yeah, that's the second part of the amendment, as I heard it.
Well, okay, time out here. Linda had a comment.
Well, I was just going to clarify that if the deputy is moved up into the clerk position, then there's a vacancy in the office because we would have there would be three employees versus four. Mm-hmm. Right now there are four. Mm-hmm. So if the deputy takes over the clerk's duties, then the amendment apparently is asking to hire a replacement for the fourth person in the office.
That's my understanding. So if there's an election, and this has to do with maybe this union thing, if there's an election and the deputy clerk does not win the election, then what happens to that new hire? Do they lose their job? Or does the deputy clerk lose their job? How does that all settle out?
Bob Taunt and I have talked about this. That's just one of the problems of the motion that's been made, is that to say someone's a manager for 2 years, they're management, they're no longer union, but then you're going to ask the employer and the union to come to some agreement to bump out somebody else that was in that position. I mean, it's when you make a decision to become a manager, a department head, you've left your last job, in my opinion. This motion, that part of the motion, no offense, Supervisor Meyer, is difficult. We can't commit the union to something, and under this motion, we're committing something that we're asking the union to do and is actually making a decision about somebody else that's not yet hired in the vacancy that we would fill, vacated by the previous person. This is, you're either union or you're not. You're either management or you're an employee. That's not offensive. That's just, that's how life is.
I want to stop you at that point and ask either Bill or Bob the question of having the union provision in this amendment, is that going to be a violation of our union contract? Because if the answer is yes, then I'm going to rule that portion of Mr. Meyer's amendment out of order, and he can certainly change it and get rid of the unionization part of it. But that's my concern is we don't need to screw up our union contract. So that's my nature of my question is, Bob, why don't you come up to the podium? Does that part of Mr. Meyer's amendment produce a problem with the unions?
Well, yes. There is no language negotiated that covers this. So if you pass this, we need to go to the union and negotiate the language because there is nothing existing that allows this.
Okay, Mr. Meyer, what I would suggest is that you withdraw your amendment and remake the amendment without that provision in, assuming that that's acceptable with your second to withdraw that amendment. Seconder was Joe Bilskemper, who has now disappeared. Point of information, Audrey Cotter.
Is the current deputy clerk position a union position?
Yes.
Okay, so that does make it more complicated.
Yes. Okay, Mr. Bilskemper is back. Here's what I just said, Mr. Bilskemper, because you're the seconder of the Mr. Meyer's amendment. Mr. Taunt has indicated that having the provision relating to the deputy, if she would become the interim clerk and would remain in the union, that that is a problem with the union contract. So I requested that Mr. Meyer withdraw his amendment and then remake it without the unionization provision in there. But he would need your consent as a seconder to withdraw that if he chooses to do that. Okay, Mr. Meyer, what's your choice?
I'll withdraw it, but I have a question.
Sure.
I was under the understanding that if she ran for re-election after she was interim clerk, that's fine, and she won, she's in management job then. But the concern was that if she lost, then she would lose her union rights. That's why I put that in there.
And that's what Mr. O'Malley said, is that is the case. That's how it works.
Yeah. All right, well, I'll just put a period at the end of on my amendment at the end of term and scratch the sentence about lose her union rights.
Okay. I'll ask the clerk to read the amendment as I believe it now stands. And, Mr. Bilskemper, you're agreeable to seconding that again? Okay. Can you read that amendment?
Under the now, therefore, be it resolved, eliminate points 1 and 2. Eliminate the be it further resolved statement and the fiscal note. Proceed with appointing the deputy clerk on an interim basis until January 6, 2013, with an adjusted salary to be determined for the position. Proceed at once with the process of hiring a replacement position to fill the vacancy in the county clerk's office.
Is that your amendment, Mr. Meyer?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and Mr. Bilskemper, that's agreeable with you. Okay. Further discussion next on the list.
Point of information.
Point of information, Mr. Mettinger.
In order for this amendment to be successful, wouldn't you have to ask the acting deputy if she thinks this is a really good idea? Because you may pass this and she says, hey, I'm safe where I am. Why would I give it up? So I think you'd have to ask her if she thinks this is a good idea.
It's difficult to put her on the spot in that regard, doing something that all of a sudden happened at the last second here. And I'm not sure it's appropriate because this isn't a public hearing. So she may have to give some signals, pulling her ear or something, I don't know, but I think that we cannot call on her under our procedures. All right, next is Jerry Sobranek.
My question is a point of information. If the deputy clerk decides to fill the vacancy of the clerk, we're talking 3 years here before the next election.
Two.
Aren't we? 2013? Isn't that the next election?
Oh, yeah, fall. Yeah, so, yeah, it's about, yeah, three.
So this is 2011. It'd be the fall of 2012.
And then take office in 2013. So the election would be 2 years from now.
So she could hold this position for 2 years.
That is correct.
Right, thank you.
Okay. And there's a couple people that have spoken once. I'm going to get back to you, but I want to do the first-timers initially. And Marilyn Pedretti, you're up.
Okay. I think I kind of agree with the beginning when Don said this is getting complicated. And it is a different dynamic. I heard that a couple of times in executive. This isn't your typical kind of a position. It's an elected position, and yet you have to know a lot of things. Speaking as a town clerk, we rely on the county clerk's office for those elections. They're hard. The Government Accountability Board has a lot of rules. There's a lot of things you have to do, just the whole voting apparatus, everything that goes with that, in addition to everything else. Mr. Menninger says this is an insider's job then. Quite frankly, it should be. I think you need to work on the inside to understand the job. I don't like that it's an elected position. It is. State statute, it is. To me, it makes the most sense. You have somebody trained. They're a deputy for a reason. I have a deputy clerk. I'm training her. Should I ever become sick, die in office, she's ready to step in. And that's what I think this is for. So I would vote in support of this. Thank you.
Any other first-timers want to discuss the amendment? Vicki Burke.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to speak in opposition to the amendment. And I think that when Supervisor Pedretti was speaking, I believe she is an appointed, the clerk is appointed in the town of Holland. It's a different position. But I think it should be open for others to apply simply because this is a very good job with great benefits, and it should be open to other people who have a similar training and background in it. Certainly, it says nothing about the qualifications of the deputy clerk. We should really talk about it as a position, and I think that there may be others who are qualified and wish to run. And the truth of the matter is that the person holding the position has an advantage when it comes to the election, and I think that should be open for others.
Margaret Wood.
Thank you. I don't know if this is speaking or just I need some information. Is there not training that is provided at the state level for county clerks?
Linda, can you answer that?
No, there is not.
Is there any training by another organization other than, is there a Wisconsin County's Clerk Association or something similar that has training for newly elected clerks?
The Wisconsin County Clerks Association has developed a handbook and does a 5-hour course.
Okay. Doesn't the state provide election training?
The state only provides training for doing the statewide voter registration process. That's computer training, basically. They do not provide training for programming the ballots or any of the other requirements.
I'm not sure where in this discussion this was mentioned, but I think the county has seen other situations where someone new comes in and the people that have served have been the people that have helped integrate that person into their new job. So I don't think that the whole idea of not knowing what you might be doing really is relevant. That's why we have a department. It's not a single person department wherein you have to know all and everything, you know, the day you hit the ground running. So I think within the county, we do expect that new people coming in would have the advantage of having other people in the department be there to support them while they get their feet wet. So I think that means I'm speaking against the motion.
The amendment, you mean? Okay. Any other first-timers want to speak? Okay, then we're back to Ralph Geary. Oh, I'm sorry, Chuck Spiker.
Being a first-timer. I supported Mr. Meyer's amendment, and I support it simply because I've talked to the village administrator in Holman, and I've talked to some of the clerks. out and what the chief deputy clerk has done, and she's just done, they tell me she's a fantastic job. And I base it on it. They work with her. She came up to Holman, I know, and really Mary couldn't speak more highly of her. You know, they talk about government. I wish they would have been at the executive meeting today when we discussed this about the times we're going to do this and we're going to do that. Mr. Meyer touched on this. But the board hadn't decided yet, so that makes me a little suspicious right away. But you talk about it, you're going to have the best person to do the job. In 2 years, she can run for re-election. I don't know, and I said in an executive meeting, I have no idea if she's Democrat or Republican. I don't really care. I want the best person for the job, and I really believe that our chief deputy is the best person for the job. And if the voters don't like that, they can answer that when I'm up for re-election if I run. Thank you.
Further discussion? First-timers. Jeff Schrader.
Am I a first-timer?
I think you are on this one.
Thank you. I would support Mr. Meyer's amendment also because I feel it's a more fair way than what Mr. Miniger was abdicating. So that's all I have to say.
Tara Johnson, will you take the chair, please?
Any other first-timers? Oh, Chairman Doyle.
Thank you. I had actually not planned on speaking on this, but I really feel that I need to at this point. I agree with most of the things that Mr. Menninger said, except for we need to get a Democrat in there. I am a Democrat. People know that. That's no surprise. If we would appoint a person to this position simply because they're a Democrat, I think that would be a huge mistake. I think we need to appoint a person who is qualified, and I think we need to appoint the most qualified person, whomever that may turn out to be. My reason for supporting the process as the resolution reads and not supporting my good friend Mr. Meyer, who happens to be wrong in this situation, is that it's a matter of transparency. I mean, we are elected officials, and we are appointing a person who is also then going to be an elected official. I have had the distinction over the course of my years of being county board chair to appoint a number of county board supervisors. And I, as I said at the executive committee, there were a number of times where I went into that process saying, I know who I'm going to appoint. And maybe we don't even need this stupid process because I already know who I'm going to appoint. And sometimes I did. And guess what? Sometimes I did not. Sometimes I chose somebody with the guidance of the people who sat in on the interview. Sometimes I chose somebody who was not the person that I would have expected to have appointed. The important thing, though, is not who I appointed. The important thing, from my perspective, is the process. And that really is critical in a situation like this when we are looking at an elected position compared to an appointed position. But I want to make an analogy here. We have a couple people sitting up here that I think, actually all of them sitting up here, do a really good job. Let's say that Steve O'Malley decided that he was going to retire. He was going to go off to do whatever the case may be, and it's never happened, I know, but Gary says, I'd like to become the new county administrator, all right? Would it be appropriate for us to say, he's doing a great job, let's just appoint him and not go through the process? We have never done that before. We have never, ever done that I recall in my time here, just simply said, we'll just put the number two guy in the number one position. Never. And there's a good reason for that, and it's transparency. We are not La Crosse County Incorporated. We are La Crosse County government. We are a political body, and we report not to stockholders, but to taxpayers and to voters. And I think we have an obligation to have an open and fair process. I was the one, Mr. Meyer, who said, I assume that Ginny is probably going to be the one who gets appointed because she's the deputy. Logically, she may move up. But maybe it won't be her. Maybe it would be somebody else. And quite honestly, the reason I wasn't going to speak is this isn't that big of a deal to me in terms of who that position is. because I don't look at that as some big partisan thing where this person is going to be county clerk this year and next year they're going to be state assembly and the year after that they're going to be governor or something. I've never seen that kind of progression. And so, you know, with all due respect to Mr. Menninger, I could care less if it's a Democrat or a Republican. I just want a fair and open process, and anybody who's interested should be able to apply. And I liked the comment that was made that, you know, they're going to face the voters, and at this point they should face at least the county board and not just the insider job. And that's why I do not feel strongly in terms of who gets the position. I do feel strongly, though, in terms of how we do it. I think we're under the microscope. Let's do it right. And $400 and a couple of hours worth of time to do some interviews, big deal. It's worth that to show the public that we're going to be fair and open. Thank you.
I have inherited a list of speakers from Chairman Doyle. So I see I see Supervisor Richmond, and I'm assuming that's for a second time, or is that on the main, on the main, not on the amendment? So will you just, for my benefit, any other first time speakers on the amendment, if you would ask? Okay, Supervisor Cruz, and then we'll move to second time.
Thank you. I'll be voting against this amendment for all the reasons that Chairman Doyle outlined. Plus, I don't want this to be a precedent-setting vote where in future when someone retires that we say it's okay just to appoint their deputy. So that's another reason why I don't think that this would be a good move. Thank you.
Now we're on second time speakers on the amendment, and I have Supervisor Geary on the amendment.
I'd like to get rid of this, so I move to exhaust the speaker list. Which means everybody has spoken once, we're done speaking, then we just vote on it, right? Is that the correct terminology? Vicky,
it's been moved by Supervisor Geary to exhaust the speaker list. Is there a second to that? On the amendment, right. Seconded by Supervisor Bills Kemper. I don't think this is debatable. Anybody want to challenge me on that? It's... exhausting the list of speakers?
Well, it's related to the amendment.
Now we have to deal with the issue of exhausting the list of speakers first. I apologize, Supervisor Cotter, but okay. I think that is not debatable. So all those in favor of exhausting the list of speakers signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The noes, if you would raise your hand, please. Supervisor Billings, Pedretti, Weirs, Friedland, and Spiker, are you a no?
Correct.
And Cotter. That the exhausting of the speaker list has passed for the amendment.
Could I ask a point of information?
Please.
What was the vote on that?
It was everybody except those that I listed.
I think you have to announce what did they say?
And I will do that. Thank you, Supervisor Spiker.
I think it takes 2/3 vote, doesn't it?
So the numbers are 22 in favor and 6 opposed. That's 70. My eyes don't work that way. 78%. Thank you for the reminder on that. Supervisor Cotter.
Thank you. Can we divide the question on the amendment? Because it tagged on to the end of it was the appointment, the hiring of an additional person.
Not at this point.
I thought that was what got taken out.
No, I don't. I didn't hear the hiring being taken out.
It's up. It's whatever you want to do as a board.
No, it's not. Point of order. We've already moved to close debate.
I thought she moved it. I'm sorry.
No,
order.
We now have to
So
vote.
We're now on the, we are now voting on the amendment. And let's do this on the computer, please. So all those in favor of Supervisor Meyer's amendment as it was modified, vote yes. All those opposed, vote no.
Point of information.
I just want to say for the last, can we not do points of information once the vote has been called for, please? It makes it very difficult.
Could we have a reading of the amendment then?
That would be lovely. That not even necessarily a point of information, but an appropriate request.
Under the now, therefore, be it resolved, eliminate points 1 and 2, eliminate the be it further resolved statement and the fiscal note. proceed with appointing the deputy clerk on an interim basis until January 6, 2013, with an adjusted salary to be determined for the position. Proceed at once with the process of hiring a replacement person to fill the vacancy in the county clerk's office.
On the computer, please. Patience, everyone, patience.
I agree.
The Supervisor Myers amendment has failed on a vote of 8 to 20. We are now back to the original resolution. Discussion on that. We're ready to vote. Let's do that on the computer also, please. If you are in favor of the resolution as it was originally presented, vote yes. If you are opposed, vote no. I apologize. I thought people would. We're not voting yet, sorry. Supervisor Richmond, on the original resolution.
Well, I will speak on that original. I just have a problem with $50,000 to have a special election. Where did that cost come up? Maybe that's something that we should be thinking about at this time
election. Yeah, the clerk can help with that.
The cost is primarily the cost of all the polling places. We would be responsible for the whole election, so we had to reimburse all the cities, villages, and towns for all their election expenses, which includes their poll workers and all their paperwork, et cetera, and those figures, plus the cost of the ballots themselves, of course, and advertising for the election.
So if there was another election coming up in, say, the next year, then that would be the cost as well, correct? And the county would bear that, or that would be a...
The reason this would cost any money or the extra money at all is because there would be nothing else on the ballot this fall. We would have to hold a special election for a county clerk. If it were held in conjunction with the spring election of 2012, there may or may not be extra expenses depending on primary and so on. But those would be the options.
Okay. So there could be a spring election in 2012, being that county board seats are up.
No.
Mr. Shepherd.
There is only one opportunity to have a special election for this office by statute. That time is November 2011. That is the only time that you can have this election. This is different than other offices. We've talked a little bit about different offices, but there is a very specific statute on when the resignation or vacancy occurs and when the order is done and the timing and all that kind of stuff. I can explain all that if you really want the detail, but I can tell you that her resignation is too late to qualify for the spring election of 2011, and because the spring election of 2012 is too close to the actual election for the next four-year term, you can't do it then. So the only time is November 2011, because as Linda's explained, there are no other elections. You're stuck with all the costs. And I did talk to the Government Accountability Board about this, and he said it, all those costs fall on the county.
Is that it for you, Supervisor Richmond? Sorry, I made you wait. I want to make sure I
yes.
give you the chance. I don't have any other names for speakers. Supervisor Benrud.
Thank you. This is my first time speaking, and I think we could solve this problem if Linda would not retire.
So all those in favor? No.
I'd like to call a question on that. Thank you.
The question has been called. There are no other speakers on the list. So we will vote on the computer, on the original resolution. So this is resolution 1228. If you're in favor of the resolution, vote yes. If you're opposed, vote no.
The resolution has passed on a vote of 23-5. That gets us to, if I can find my agenda here.
We still have 1229 from Executive Committee.
Thank you. 1229 from Executive Committee.
Draw your attention to the resolution in white paper that was on should have been on your desks this evening. And to clarify that my intent will be to move the resolution 1229 as it was originally in the packet, and then if that receives a second, ask to keep the floor to introduce a replacement resolution that was approved by the Executive Committee at our meeting earlier this evening.
In that regard, Ms. Johnson, I would ask that you dispense with the reading of the entire original one and simply read the title.
Lovely. I move. So item 12-29 to regarding continuing support of high-speed rail, increased frequency of passenger rail service in the current Empire Builder route, and seeking a comprehensive study of potential users to identify the viability of minimizing operating costs to the state. I move its approval.
Moved by Tara Johnson, second by Monica Cruz. Tara Johnson, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move the approval of a replacement resolution, as I indicated, that was approved by unanimously by the Executive Committee at our meeting at 5 o'clock this evening, that should be on your desk and is to the honorable members of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors regarding support of increased frequency of passenger rail service on the current Empire Builder route, which is Chicago to the Twin Cities. Whereas the City and County of La Crosse have long supported the Midwest Rail Initiative, which calls for higher speed and more frequent train services between Chicago and the Twin Cities via La Crosse, and has been actively supported, the Empire Builder High Speed Rail Coalition. And whereas at the request of the coalition, UWL Business School conducted a scientific survey of area business leaders that found an overwhelming 83% interest by respondents in increased frequency. And whereas based on the results of the survey of local businesses, there will be a positive impact benefit for our business community if the frequency of Amtrak service is increased. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the La Crosse County Board calls upon Governor-elect Walker and the legislature to work with Ramsey County and the state of Minnesota to establish more frequent passenger train service to communities along the existing Amtrak Empire Builder route by adding an additional train per day at conventional speeds. Be it further resolved that a copy of this resolution be sent to the Governor's Office, area federal and state legislators, as well as the Empire Builder High Speed Rail Coalition, the Midwest Rail Initiative, the Wisconsin Department of Transportation, the Minnesota Department of Transportation, Onboard Midwest, and the Minnesota High Speed Rail Commission. Fiscal note is there is no direct impact requiring the expenditure of La Crosse County funding. I move its approval.
The substitute amendment offered by Supervisor Johnson is seconded by Jerry Sobranek. Is there any discussion? Jeff Schrader.
Thank you. I'd like to offer an amendment to this. And do you want me to read the amendment?
Yes, please.
Okay. Go down to now, therefore be it resolved, down to the next to the last line where it says existing Amtrak Empire Builder route by adding an additional train. I'd like to add into that. Each way.
Seconded by Audrey Cotter. All in favor of adding each way, say aye. Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
And then at the end of that sentence, take away the period and the cost to provide this service.
Then I'm not clear on.
Pardon?
Can you read how that will read then?
And the cost of the funding of this service.
People follow. Is there a second on that? Second by Audrey Cotter. I'm not finding my resolution or my amendment. Thank you. Okay, can you repeat that again, Mr. Schrader?
All right. The First Amendment was to...
No, we're fine on the First Amendment. Go to the second one.
Okay. Per day at conventional speeds and the cost to provide this service. Otherwise, the funding to provide this service. The cost of the funding...
Wait a minute. What paragraph are you in?
The last one. And the cost to provide the funding for this.
Okay, repeat
that. Of course, they will do that. That should be added.
Okay, read how that sentence will read now.
Okay. The whole sentence. Whoa, where does it start here?
In the first, now therefore be resolved.
I'll start right from the beginning. Now,
yes.
Therefore, be resolved that the La Crosse County Board calls upon the Governor-elect Walker and the legislature to work with Ramsey County and the state of Minnesota to establish more frequent passenger train service to communities along the existing Amtrak Empire Builder route by adding an additional train each way at conventional speeds and the cost to provide the funding for the service. And the cost of funding for this service.
So are you saying that you want the state to provide the cost?
I want the funding for this service.
Okay, so you want another train and you want the state to pay for it. Am I following on that?
No.
Okay, then I'm...
I want to know how much it's going to cost the state to fund this. What?
Okay. Are other people confused like I am?
Maybe I am seeing that.
Okay.
Wrong.
If anybody wants to help me on this one, I'll take any help you can give. I'm sorry, Mr. Schrader, I'm just not tracking on what you're trying to accomplish here. Let me see if I can flesh this out. What you're saying is you'd like the state to consider adding an additional train, but to look at what the cost is going to be? Is that what you're saying?
And to determine the cost.
To determine the cost. Okay, so let's try this. By adding an additional train each way per day at conventional speeds and to determine the cost thereof? All right. Audrey Cotter, are you back on your second with that?
I Maybe that's...
There we go.
I think adding it each way per day is relevant to the issue. To ask for an estimate in relation to the cost is kind of muddying the waters there.
So are you saying you're not seconding it?
I'm not seconding the second amendment, his second amendment.
First one's already passed, so we're on the second one. So if you're not seconding it, then...
I'm done with that.
Is there anybody else? Is there anybody who's going to second the second amendment? Okay, that fails for lack of a second. Any further discussion on the resolution as amended? Ralph Geary.
On that, now, therefore, no, I'm up above. On the Ramsey County or the state of Minnesota put in $10 million, right? And that,
Mr. O'Malley?
During this entire debate over the last couple of weeks, I've received an email from Ramsey County's main legislative liaison that's indicated that they are going after a $10 million from the existing capital plan that the state of Minnesota has and pledging up to $40 million of a federal Tiger grant that Ramsey County has already received for this purpose. This is new information within the last week.
Okay, the Tiger grant was a transportation grant? Or?
Right, that Ramsey County received, and it's their discretion. They've already put millions of dollars into rail and the depot and those kinds of things, so they're one of the strongest advocate on that side of the river for additional service and high-speed rail. They've followed the results that have gone on, and they've reached out to us and said, we're looking at doing this, and so this is new information. So there'll be some funding coming from the other side of the river that we could help inform Wisconsin, and maybe they can come to together with an arrangement on this.
Okay, that Tiger grant, that had to be used in Ramsey County or in the state of Minnesota?
I don't know the exact details, but they're pledging it towards this goal specifically. Oh, okay. Of an additional
train per day. Well, my question
was,
actually I was getting down to, did it apply to Wisconsin and Illinois, or do they each have to apply for that type of grant themselves?
I don't know that. I do know that Ramsey County has indicated they believe they can get another $10 million from the state of Minnesota, that they have $40 million of a Tiger grant to pledge to this purpose, and they're interested in working with the state of Wisconsin to see if this can happen. That's all we know at this point, and this is just an olive branch to reach out that it's another possibility to expand service to our community.
Well, I guess my question was, like, to run an Amtrak each way, one per day, obviously the fares don't cover the costs. They need massive government subsidy. Highways, we pay for it with a gas tax, but well, except in Wisconsin. But but if Minnesota's going to put in $50 million, either 10 and 40, and Wisconsin would have to do similar, and Illinois would do similar, we're asking the taxpayers to fork out $150 million to run an Amtrak each way because the fares can't. You know, most people are in favor of doing a lot of this stuff until you tell them what it's actually going to cost them. And I can't figure out what it's going to cost us. I'm seeing $50 million stuck up in Minneapolis area.
With due respect, that's not our issue. We're suggesting that there may be a way to work together. The politicians and policymakers above us will make that evaluation and that decision. If we've learned anything from the discussion over the last couple of months, there are opinions beyond ours on this. All we're saying is that there's an opportunity to work with the state across the river. An additional train per day would serve our community. They will make their own decision and evaluation on what they need to do. That's all we're doing is advocating that we believe it would meet our community's needs. They will decide whether or not what the dollar amount is that's necessary, what the fare box amount, but as included in your original packet, the UWL study indicated that our business community supports this idea and is willing to pay more for fares to actually get additional frequency. That's all the...
Right. The business community, it was alluded to that we're going to get more business or additional taxes. We'll get more sales tax, we'll get more whatever. Do the additional taxes we get offset the amount of taxes it's going to take to run this train?
Don't know that. That's an evaluation that the state will make.
Next on the list, Sharon Hampson.
Thank you. This is minor compared to everything else, but in the now, therefore, be it resolved, you have governor-elect, and then in the be it further resolved, be sent to the governor's office. And I think in terms of consistency and accuracy, elect should be removed from the now therefore be it resolved, because at the time this goes in, he will have been sworn in as governor.
Well, how about we do it this way? Why don't we just say Governor Walker, and then we know, because so there's not an issue if he's going to go to the old governor or new governor or whatever.
Right. Why don't we just use his name? Elect. Yeah.
So we'll just say in both places. Is there any objection to saying Governor Walker in both places? Okay. By unanimous consent, we'll make that change. All right. Jeff Schrader.
What'd I do?
You had your hand up. I take it you're passing.
Well, you were talking about finances, I think, and that was the gist of my rest of my motion there, but
okay.
That's fine.
Chuck Spiker.
I'm trying to follow you, what you're trying to do here. Now, Resolution 1229, this is going to be amended to that, is that my understanding? Or are you replacing it?
This is a substitute amendment, so if this passes, then we will have a second vote on approving the resolution as amended by the substitute amendment.
Okay.
Procedurally, is that right, Bill? Okay. All right, Jerry Sobranek.
We've rode this train far enough. I call the question.
Hey, I'm the one who's supposed to be making jokes here, not you. Any objection to closing debate?
No.
Seeing no objection to closing debate, all in favor of the resolution with the one amendment added to it, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. All right, Tara Johnson. Oh, yes. Now all in favor of the resolution as amended, say aye. Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. Thank you. All right. Ms. Johnson, you're up.
No, you have one.
12:30.
I move to table for, or to...
hold it over for 30 days,
hold over
I think
for 60
say.
Days.
I mean, sorry, 60.
Resolution 12-30.
Is there a second to holding it over for 60 days? Seconded by Sharon Hampson. Mr. O'Malley, why don't you explain why we're proposing that?
The bargaining unit recommended approval of the resolution, and there were not sufficient votes to pass it, so we're going back to negotiate with the bargaining unit.
All in favor of holding over for 60 days, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. Is that it for you, Ms. Johnson?
Yes.
Aging and Long-Term Care Committee, Roger Plesha.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have item 12-31, authorization to approve change orders. Whereas Hillview RCAC construction project includes a base bid construction cost of $2,788,795, and whereas approximately 5% of the base bid construction cost is considered to be a reasonable estimate for addressing changes to construction plans and problems that may or will normally occur in the project. Now, therefore, it be resolved that the contingency budget of $153,772 is hereby established for the purpose of addressing changes and problems. Be it further resolved that change orders up to $20,000 shall be approved in accordance with existing authority limits set forth by Chapter 4.11, Purchasing Procedures of Finance section of the county ordinance. Be it further resolved that change orders in excess of $20,000 shall require approval of the Aging and Long-Term Care Committee. Be it further resolved that a list of all approved change orders shall be approved by the Aging and Long-Term Care Committee on a monthly basis. Fiscal note, contingency amounts are calculated on the base bid construction cost. Contingency of $153,772 equals 5.5% of the base bid construction cost. I move for its approval.
Moved by Mr. Plesha, seconded by Andrea Richmond. Discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye. Oh, wait. I missed him. Jeff Schrader.
Is this money that was already budgeted?
Mr. O'Malley.
Yes, included in the resolution that the board adopted in October awarding the bid also identified it a separate allowance for furniture and equipment of $275,000 and this specific dollar amount of for miscellaneous contingency. We needed to establish a process for how to deal with that, but this is all budgeted and within the authority that you already authorized us.
Now, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. That it for you, Mr. Plesha?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Public Works and Infrastructure, Mr. Spiker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have item 1232 approved by the Public Works Committee unanimously, by the Legislative Committee unanimously, support for eliminating Wisconsin DNR fees regarding waste residue resources from the NSP French Island facility. Where state law currently imposes certain Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources fees for solid waste disposal at the La Crosse County landfill include residue from the NSP French Island facility. Whereas the current statutory definition of biomass includes RDF used for renewable facility and services before January 1st, 1998, which includes waste delivered to the NSP facility for conversion to energy. Whereas the addition of the exception to the WDNR fees for waste sent to the renewable facility burning RDF fuel would promote renewable energy policies in the state, whereas burning waste with energy recovery is higher in the state priority for managing waste than land disposal of solid waste, whereas such an exception would be very narrow exception applicable only to facilities use RDF and would result in substantial savings to La Crosse County Solid Waste Department. Now, therefore, be resolved that the La Crosse County Board does hereby support an amendment to the state statutes that has the effect of exempting waste residue from the RDF facility for the WDNR fees at the landfill. Be it further resolved that the county clerk shall forward a copy of the resolution State Senator Dan Kopanicki, State Representative Michael Hipps, and Jennifer Schilling, and urging the adoption of such an amendment to the state law. No cost to the La Crosse County, potential savings, $250,000 per year. Move for approval, Mr. Chairman.
Moved by Mr. Spiker, seconded by Leon Paff. Any discussion? Jill Billings.
I ask for the patience of my committee, but I'm wondering if someone could explain this a little better to me. What do we pay the $250,000 for now exactly? I couldn't understand from the committee minutes. I apologize.
Mr. Spiker.
Mr. Chairman, I'm disappointed because Hank presented this to two committees in that, and he should have been here tonight, as far as I'm concerned, to present it to the county board. But the administrator's going to try.
Go for it.
I won't do it as eloquently or with as good a pictures, but as I understand it, the current facility that once you bring garbage to the waste energy facility, it goes through a burner. The ash doesn't have to pay, it doesn't accrue fees when it's disposed at the landfill. But the residue that when you go into the burning process is there that can't be burned, that then still has to be buried, ends up having to incur the fee when it's buried. We're the only facility in the state that ends up incurring this additional fee. Ash is exempt by law. The residue that doesn't get burned, because they try to burn everything they can at the start of the process. What Chairman Spiker was talking about from the committee is Hank had a very good description visually on exactly how that works. Is that all right?
So why do we pay that fee instead of Excel?
The system pays it, and that's part of the contract with Excel. So we end up having to pay it as if it was just regular garbage, and that's not the case.
It's our garbage, not Excel's garbage,
right.
Would be the theory. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor of the resolution say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. Don't forget we have an addendum. We have a closed session item, which is closed session on imminent or current litigation. But before we do that, I want to jump to and do the future agenda topics because then anybody who doesn't want to stay, media folks or whomever, doesn't have to hang around to wondering what we're going to be talking about. So are there any future agenda topics or announcements, anything like that? Okay, well, that was easy. Tara Johnson.
Mr. Chairman, I move we go into closed session pursuant or for the purpose of conferring with legal counsel for the governmental body which is rendering oral or written advice concerning strategy to be adopted by the body with respect to litigation in which it is or is likely to become involved pursuant to Wisconsin State Statute Section 19.85, Parent 1, Parent G. I move to go into closed session.
Seconded by Vicki Burke. All in favor of going into closed session, as she just read, say aye. Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. We are in closed session. We are in open session. Before we do the motion to adjourn, Mr. Sobranek talked to me before the meeting and had a very good suggestion. This being the holiday time, he suggested that upon the commencement of this meeting, we all meet over at Artie's for a little bit of holiday cheer. And so I would, on behalf of Jerry and everybody else, encourage everybody to join us over at Artie's as soon as we're done here. Having said that, I will report out for open session that we discussed the topics listed for closed session. No votes were taken. And Mr. Sobranek. Mr. Plesha? Thank you. The pictures from the County Board group photograph were are ready, and you can get those through the County Board Chair Secretary, $10 a piece, right, Roger? Okay, so, and there's multiple copies, so if you're interested in one, go on up and give $10 to Margaret. Anybody else before we do a motion? Jerry Sobranek.
Thank you. I have a suggestion on how to avoid a parking ticket. And the best way I know of how to avoid a parking ticket is to put your windshield wipers on high. Drives them crazy. Move the adjourn.
Moved by Jerry Sobranek, second by Arlene Vendred. All in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed no. Carried unanimously.